Africa Climate Conversations, the podcast.
Hello, and how are you? This is the Africa Climate Conversations. My name is Sophie Mbogwa. My sincere apologies, my dear. I tell you, fatigue kicked in and I had to go on a mandatory break. I'm really sorry, but I'm here. So this is the Africa Climate Conversations. And as I had promised you, we will be at the southern coast of Kenya in a town called Munje. It's about 10:30 in the morning. I'm on a motorcycle headed out to Munje village in Msambweni, a small fishing town in Kwale County, about 60 kilometers south of Mombasa, Kenya. Fruit trees such as mangoes, guavas, papaya, and coconuts lit this rather bushy natural terrain. The breeze sweeps gently, making the heat bearable. At the edge of these coastal farms, a group of women came together during the COVID-19 pandemic. They started a 15-member self-help group. Today, about 4 years later, they have grown into a 30-member community-based organization. They are conserving a section of mangrove forest along the Vanga-Funzi Bay on the southern coast of Kenya through planting mangrove propagules, also improving their livelihoods through beekeeping, ecotourism, managing village waste, educating the villagers on conservation and basket weaving. Why was there a need to come together? Here is Mona Diwani Yusuf, the Tunusuru Conservation Women's Group chairlady.
We decided to form this conservation group because of the impacts we have experienced in this village. Despite our reliance on the mangrove forest for fish breeding, it faced one-ton logging. As coastal people, we depend on the sea as our husbands earn a living there. Hence, we decided to conserve the forest for the purpose of fish breeding. Secondly, reduce the rising temperatures and strong waves that can affect our villages. The primary issue at that time was the community's indiscriminate clearing of the forest, which resulted in significant degradation of the area. We recognized that our community was in imminent danger. Fishing had become rampant, yet there were no other alternative jobs. Hence, many invaded the forest. Some started harvesting the trees for commercial purposes, building, and charcoal burning, and degradation started there. The community uses mangroves as medicine. They also get fish bait by digging out animals found on the roots. This practice fells trees. Also, there is the issue of climate change, where trees have died due to drought and floods. So we thought we need to avoid further damage. Depleting this forest would negatively impact our livelihood. Hence, we decided to protect the forest to try to get it back to the original state we witnessed before.
The 2017-2027
National Mangrove Ecosystem Management Plan shows that Vanga-Funzi system occupies about 7,638 hectares, constituting 40% of the entire mangroves in Kwale County. Increased demand of mangrove wood products in the area has led to degradation of the forest in many parts of the Kwale County. There are approximately 3,559 hectares of degraded mangrove areas in Vanga-Funzi system that needs rehabilitation. Mona Diwani told the Africa Climate Conversations that the women started by sensitizing the community about the importance of the forest, the dangers they face with the rising temperatures, and why they need to conserve the forest for future generations. Over the years, youth and children clubs working closely with the women have emerged from community sensitization. Tunusuru is a call for help. Mona Diwani says the women had no scientific knowledge on how best to plant the propagules since their forefathers never did so. All they wanted was to save their forest, which was disappearing on their watch. But after planting the first bunch of trees closely together, the help finally came from the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Research Institute.
We just volunteered to plant the propagules. We didn't know we had to measure the tree distances when planting. We just knew that if we planted the propagules, they would grow. Luckily, Madam Judith from Kemfri came and educated us. She told us if we kept planting them closely together as we did, the trees would die as the roots would be close together. Hence, she advised us to plant them in lines of 2 by 1.5 meters. The trees require regular care for about 2 years. Therefore, we carry out daily patrols to prevent the community from digging up out fish baits and from causing damage to the forest. Also, the ocean current brings with it waste materials. Sometimes those waste materials attach themselves to the young trees, clogging them. Therefore, we come in daily, either collecting the waste materials or planting the propagules in deforested areas or in nurseries.
By December last year, the women had propagated about 400,000 propagules in nurseries. Wanadiwani says all of these have matured and have been permanently planted within the forest blocks. By the end of February this year, about 50,000 propagules were in nursery. The propagules are cared for in nursery for about 4 to 6 months before being transplanted. The group earns a living through selling the mangrove seedlings to institutions. However, they also have institutions supporting their conservation effort through buying the seedlings from the group, of which the women, the community and the partners plant together within the forest block.
When we find an institution to partner, we plant together. If none comes along, we volunteer and plant. We have planted about 30 acres. We have partnered with Kenya Forest Services and the area chief. We sold 10,000 seedlings at 30 shillings to Kodio. From the proceeds, we bought pots and chairs. Kodio sponsored us again, buying about 20,000 seedlings, and we managed to build an apiary and buy 8 beehives. The fisheries department supported us by buying 50,000 seedlings. Hence, we are building a social hall. They came back and bought 30,000 seedlings. This time, we built another apiary. So, we have 2 apiaries where we keep bees. We are proud of what we do, as everything we have now comes from the profits we have acquired from conserving these mangroves.
Fatuma Mwanjenje told the Africa Climate Conversations that beekeeping activities started at the end of 2022 with 8 hives. The group so far has 100 beehives and a honey processing machine, having recently received support from the Kenya Marine and Fisheries and Socioeconomic Development Project. Currently, about 10 hives have bees. The group last harvested 12 kilograms, selling a kilograms at 1,000 shillings. They are expecting to harvest again this March. What are the major challenges they are facing with beekeeping?
One of the major challenges we faced the first time was that we had an expert to advise us to reduce the number of hives in our apiary. The bees had started colonizing the hives and also started producing honey. But on moving them, many moved out and we had to start all over again. But we are grateful that we are making strides and we are expecting a harvest this season. With bees, one has to be very keen. Once they colonize a hive, you must clean the hive to protect them from ants and any other insects. Insect infestations cause the bees to depart from their hives. Drought is another major challenge you're facing. Production is very low due to the drought. Sometimes you expect to harvest after 3 months, but it can take you up to 6 months because they have to travel long distance to feed. They produce honey, but later than expected. But we provide them with water. And for the market, it's a big challenge, but we are to sell to institutions that support us, individuals and tourists visiting the area. But we are yet to venture into other markets beyond that.
Apart from the honey business, the women have invested in cooking pots, chairs and plates, which they rent out during wedding ceremonies to the villagers. They rent a pot with a capacity to cook 50 kilograms at 500 shillings, a chair at 10 shillings and a plate at 5 shillings each. Mwanadiwani says monthly the group can earn about 6,000 to 7,000 shillings depending on the wedding activities. The women save the money through table banking. In case of an emergency, a member can borrow interest-free loans. Here is Mwanadiwani explaining more on savings.
On table banking, we have 2 modes of savings, a personal savings and a group emergency kitty. For the savings kitty, a member is required to contribute between 100 and 1,000 shillings monthly, depending on their ability. That's their own individual savings, from which they earn a dividend at the end of the year. Then daily, each member contributes 20 shillings towards the emergency kitty. If, for example, a member has an emergency, say a child requires school fees, someone gets sick, or emergency travel has occurred, they can borrow interest-free from this kitty. At the end of the year, a member earns a dividend based on their savings. Those who save 1,000 shillings monthly can get up to 30,000 shillings.
Mariam Hamisi told the Africa Climate Conversations that through these savings, she and other women have managed to upgrade their family houses and buy a sound system for the village mosque. The women are now building a social hall with a capacity to hold 50 to 100 people. Hamisi says the capacity that they are capitalizing on wedding ceremonies to be held here, as well as community meetings, earning the group an extra coin. However, she says the women hopes that such infrastructure will also encourage their future generations to conserve the mangrove ecosystem in the the future.
Kama mimi mwanachama.
For instance, with the money I made from selling seedlings, I was able to plaster my house, send my child to school, and install tiles. Some women did not have toilets, they will defecate in the forest. They have toilets now. There's this member whose house was so dilapidated during the flooding that it collapsed. She found herself homeless, seeking shelter from her neighbors. But today, she has built a 3-bedroom house and back to living at her place. One of the youth members was living with her parents. Today, she has managed to build and furnish a 1-bedroom house from the seedling cell. Additionally, our village mosque lacked the necessary sound equipment for prayers. We have managed to buy an amplifier and speakers. We want to leave marks that will prove to our future generations that their mothers conserved this ecosystem. Once they see the projects we have preserved for them, we hope it will inspire them to carry on conserving this ecosystem like their mothers once did.
But it hasn't been easy for these women in the past. Mwana Arusi Ali told the Africa Climate Conversations that a few years ago, the community forbade women from earning money, speaking in public or engaging in NEC activities. The 25th UN Climate Summit in 2019 adopted a 5-year work plan on enhanced action on gender. The 5-year gender action plan recognizes different impacts of climate change on women and men due to historical and current gender inequalities and multidimensional factors. It proposes new activities to mainstream gender consideration across all UN Framework Convention on Climate Change processes, active advance gender-sensitive climate actions, and promote gender leadership. Mwana Arusi says such actions have seen the women recognized not just at home, but also in county-wide programs.
Gender campaigns have given women an opportunity. Now we are seen. Women were forbidden to undertake any activity at sea. We couldn't have any women-specific projects. Today, you will spot many women groups going to the beaches, some cultivating seaweed, some collecting shells. Those are some of the small businesses women are using to earn a living. So we are grateful for our community, especially Kwale County, which has been keen on gender. Women have been granted the opportunity to form groupings and be part of the beach management unit, BMU. And we are given the opportunity to lead. This has helped because previously it was hard for a woman to stand in a meeting and just introduce herself. But today we are able to confidently stand among people, express our needs and challenges, and voice pertinent issues of importance to us as women. We are grateful that our men are supportive of the work we do. They are witnesses to the work we are doing as we are helping them pay school fees, buy food, and also help in case of emergencies such as hospital bills.
But working in a mangrove ecosystem is not easy. One of the things I've learned during this reporting trip is that no matter how careful you are, you will definitely slide and fall at some point. It is muddy, slippery, and requires special shoes. Mwana Arusi says these women do not have enough shoes and gloves, essential gear they require to undertake this job.
Some areas situated deeper within the forested area exhibit significant degradation, but accessing the areas from our nurseries requires a boat, but we don't have a boat. Also, we require gloves and gum boots, which we do not have. The reason they are essential is because the sea brings with it waste, including glass bottles. Occasionally, during the planting process, we frequently sustain cuts due to the risk of digging or stepping in mud, only to come across a glass bottle. For the plastics, they come and cover a plant. Over time, they clog the young ones, resulting to death. We also walk long distances. When we collect waste materials, we need help to ferry the waste from the forest to our holdings. So often, we have to dig deeper into our pockets to hire additional help. At times, financial strain forces us to personally transport all collected waste, regardless of its weight, to the designated holding place.
Climate change is devastating communities and biodiversity the world over. Drought and floods have increased in intensity, and it's becoming increasingly increasingly hard for communities to cope. Mangroves are highly adaptive ecosystem. They have the ability to cope with changes in salinity, temperatures, tidal changes, and anaerobic sediments. However, Monarusi says that during long-term drought, the young seedlings have difficulties adapting to severe moisture deficit and extreme heat at the same time.
Young seedlings begin to wilt at the top and eventually die during prolonged droughts. The water is salty and it also gets warmer. The combination ends up burning the roots, hence the whole plant dies. We have also observed seedling stress during too much flooding. The tidal waves get very strong. Within the forest, there are streams that bring the water and take it out. With the floods, the stream speed increases, often uprooting the young seedlings and carrying them all to the sea.
Monje village is adjacent to Funzi Island, an island consisting of four mangrove-covered islands. For years, the island has had no access roads. However, about 7 years ago, the Kenyan national government embarked on the construction of a 2-kilometer, 1.15 billion shillings bridge that would open up the island, connecting it to the south coast mainland. The bridge has been under construction for about 5 years now. Construction cut off a section of mangrove forest, disrupting the flow of the ocean current. Monamtama Juma, a Tunusuru Women Conservation Group youth leader, says the disruption killed the mangrove they had planted.
Previously, this whole area had a lot to mangroves. However, since the construction of the bridge, there have been significant changes which we have observed in the mangroves. There are fish that rear eggs in the mangroves. When the young mature, they migrate to the sea. But with the section of mangroves cut off, it makes it difficult. We lost about 10,000 mangrove seedlings because of the pollutants. You know, the previously before the bridge, the water current carrying all the waste would flow freely. But after the bridge, all the waste washed from the land settles on the mangroves. That is what killed the young mangroves we had planted.
What are the long-term impacts of such development on the mangrove ecosystem? Here is Dr. Judith Okello, a senior research scientist at the Kenya Marine and Fisheries Research Institute. Dr. Okello is a mangrove ecologist and chair of the National Mangrove Management Committee.
From a superficial point of view, you'd say that, well, the road is just passing through a small patch of mangroves, but then there's extended impacts because there's interference with the amount of water that was initially going through that particular creek and reaching the mangroves. Of course, they created some channel that would still allow water to live, but then you realize that the tides are timed. So there's a certain time when the tides have to come and they have to leave. So within this particular time frame, they have to go to that particular extent to be able to flood all the mangroves. Basically, mangroves are watered through tidal flooding. This means that whenever there's a restriction, whenever the tides are restricted, then it means some mangroves on the landward end may end up not getting flooded. Now, I would call it from a layman's point of view, may not get watered. Yeah. So in essence, they get degraded by extension. Now, something that I also noted with the road, it also interfered with the sedimentation balance. Sedimentation is an important aspect in mangroves because it is through sedimentation that new mudflats are created, and then we have new mangroves recolonizing, and then we have our forests growing and getting bigger. But then there has to be a balance. Everything, there has to be a balance. So in this case, whenever you interfere with that accretion and erosion balance, then you realize that there's a negative effect. In this case, when you walk along the road where they've put those culverts that should be allowing water from the main sea to the mangrove patch, you realize that there's now sedimentation that is occurring on the seaward side that is again, of course, affecting flooding of the mangroves, and of course is killing the mangroves that are on the seaward side. So there's a lot of impact that are associated with development that, of course, before we come up with such an infrastructure, it's very important to evaluate what kind of impacts it would have on the system in general. And maybe allow me to also mention this. I talked to some people in Funzi and I was asking them if the road is any way beneficial to them. And they said, well, we now have visitors, but then the visitors have their pros and cons. They now have a feeling that their space is being invaded. into. Now, being invaded into in the sense that there are certain areas that are now being cleared and being exposed to the sea. Their resources are now being over-harvested. The mangroves are now being over-harvested. Areas that were never being encroached by the locals are now being encroached into. So they believe that, well, yes, it's something good to them, but that it brought tourists into the area, but it has a lot of cons than the pros.
Mangroves trap and sieve sediments and pollutants emanating from land. At the same time, mangrove aerial roots act as a sieve that retains large objects such as plastics. Oceans are transboundary. The ocean transport waste and deposit from all corners of the world, settling them on mangrove forest. Mwana Arusi makes a plea to us all to be mindful when discarding waste materials.
If someone uses waste such as plastic, we kindly ask them to place it in dustbins. If they have the ability to recycle this plastic, please do so. If they lack the ability to recycle, they should heed the advice of their national environmental management authorities, who advise people to dispose of waste in designated areas. Please ensure the waste you dispose does not cause problems anywhere else in the world.
And with that plea, let us be mindful to the environment, ladies and gentlemen. We wind up today. Next, we will still stay on mangrove, but we will delve deeper on the practice of planting mangroves with Dr. Judith Okello. And so until then, take care. Kwaheri. My name is Sophie Mbogwa.
Africa Climate Conversations. The podcast.